Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the program. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Shemendra Paul, who up until January 20th was the program manager of the Information Sharing Environment. I caught up with Paul before he left his role as the program manager for the Information Sharing Environment after 6 years. Paul is staying in government, transitioning back to a career senior executive service member at the Homeland Security Department. Shemendra, always a pleasure to catch up. This is probably our annual, though a little bit late, catch up. We usually do it around the late summer, early fall timeframe. I think it's a good time to take a look back. You've been in the role of the program manager for the Information Sharing Environment for more than 6 years. A lot has changed over the last 6 years, and especially under the President Obama and his administration. Let's just start there. What's the current status of the ISE, and what's some of the biggest changes you've seen? I understand also there's been maybe some structural changes beyond this idea of changes to make information sharing and law enforcement coordination and interoperability better. Let's start with the structural changes within the ISE.
Director Clapper, in consultation with the White House and the Hill, made a decision to further integrate my office, strengthen the integration in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. My office has been integrated into the partner engagement component, and we're kind of working through that process now. It's been a very positive development. From my perspective, it reflects the maturation of our activities and is a key milestone getting further integrated into the hierarchy, the bureaucracy, in a sustainable and sustained way was key. Being a special project bolted onto the near the top of the executive branch org chart was good and powerful and allowed us to make the progress that we did, and now we're ready to make that next stage of progress, and we think being institutionally integrated has been a positive development.
So just to be clear, so our audience who's maybe not familiar with the information sharing environment, when you guys stood up back in 2003 timeframe, you were part of the intelligence community, but in a different way?
Or? No. We've always been a part of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, but we've been more administratively hosted in ODNI and aligned with the White House, right, with a direct line up to the National Security Council staff, into OMB, as we were doing the initial activity to stand up the terrorism-related whole of government information sharing environment. In this role, I or my predecessors exercised government-wide authority to plan, manage, and oversee this government-wide information sharing environment. Those authorities still exist. That mission is still there, but now we're fully integrated in ODNI. So I report to the White House through the chain of command, right, through Lieutenant General Bansamer, who's my immediate boss, Principal Deputy, the Director of National Intelligence. We still have that same government-wide mission, work with federal and non-federal partners, driving information interoperability, helping partners coordinate on the mission and policy side, enabling standards and frameworks, supporting partners to develop interoperable capabilities, all that.
So it sounds like for you, generally speaking, your mission, your efforts, your day-to-day doesn't change much. It's just maybe who you report to, and maybe it's more of a minor change, generally speaking.
I look at it as a positive development in where there's going to be more synergy around intelligence and information sharing, that we can better support our partners to build capacity. We're also going to have that emphasis on the distributed decentralized versus, program or federal agency specific approaches. So in many ways, it doesn't change, but in many ways, there's opportunities for greater unity of effort across the IC, across the federal government on this important mission. And it's also, I think, helpful from an administrative resource management perspective, clearer lines of accountability, it's more sustainable, easier for the Congress to oversee, so on and so forth.
And I know in the past we've talked about, could you work yourself out of a job, so to speak, right? Will there ever be a time mm-hmm. where the information sharing environment's not needed? I'm not sure if that exists yet, but you've been in your role as the program manager for 6.5 years or so. Do you know what your future looks like yet?
I don't know what it looks like yet. It is a time of transition for the government and for me personally. It's interesting, the working yourself out of a job, and I can say that through this evolution, the structural evolution, there is a dimension of that that's occurred, but the job is changing, it's evolving, potentially growing, and that keeps it fresh and exciting for me. In particular, I really feel an affinity to the extended communities with which I work, and that I've got the privilege to serve the national law enforcement, homeland security, counterterrorism communities, the information sharing and safeguarding communities, the federal IT community, and I really enjoy that connectivity to those communities. I want to continue to offer service and as appropriate leadership.
All right, so something to we'll catch up with you in the future if you continue as the PM ISC or if you move on to another role. Let's talk a little bit about this idea of how the job has been changing, how it's been evolving over the last 6 years. When you first came into the role as the program manager for the information sharing environment, how's that role today different than it was maybe 6 years ago?
6 years ago, we were at a much more nascent stage of development and maturity. I think now, looking back, I'm particularly proud of my community, of the progress we've made. Some of the things that are out there that I would highlight are is the level of integration of non-federal partners, and in particular, state and local law enforcement, other state and local partners, private sector, but really it's state and local law enforcement, the head and shoulders integration. Best example of that is the National Network of Fusion Centers. This is the year DHS has assessed them as mature against the baseline capabilities that we all laid out back in the 2005 to 2007 timeframe and have developed since then. Federal funding has actually dropped significantly for the National Network of Fusion Centers, but overall funding has increased because state and local partners have increased their funding. So folks are, you know, voting on the value in a distributed and decentralized yet coordinated way. The National Network of Fusion Centers is the platform, not a platform, the platform for sharing sensitive and classified threat intelligence and information between the federal government and our state and local partners. But what's really compelling about the network is the horizontal sharing as opposed to the vertical sharing. As impressive as it is that we are integrated federal, state, local, it's even more impressive to see the operational coordination and information sharing between states, between localities. Another aspect of this national network is that it's all crimes, all threats, all hazards. So in particular, the same capabilities that are being used to combat terrorism and increase resilience of communities are being used to fight organized crime, right, to be able to coordinate on individual crimes, to keep communities safe. That's good government. Privacy policies. Every fusion center has a privacy policy. Every state, with the exception of Wyoming, as a privacy policy, every federal agency, as comprehensive as the privacy guidelines published by President Bush. And those policies are enforced, they're audited, they're trained against, they're improved. A few other things that I want to highlight here is we've made this progress because of a consistent strategy, a bipartisan effort going back to the Bush administration, executive legislative branch, and The progress we've made has just been tremendous that way.
People overlook the fusion centers. I mean, so many times you hear about them and then you don't know what they're doing. But as you said, time in and time and again, they're getting the support from the state and local because they see value in that. And the value comes from some of the work you guys have been doing around creating data sharing standards, about promoting and encouraging the use of these standards. So if you know, Washington, D.C. talks to Maryland, which talks to Virginia, which talks to Pennsylvania. They can all have that same, you know, when they talk about an incident, they're all starting at the same point.
That's right. And that's right. It's, you know, we've also been able to align different epochs of information and intelligence sharing entities. So fusion centers came up post 9/11, but prior to that, you had HIDAs, high intensity drug trafficking area centers that came up in the 80s and 90s, right, to, you know, in the war on drugs. Prior to that, you had RIS centers, regional information sharing centers, in the 70s and 80s that came up, focused on regional organized crime. Oh, you have JTTFs, on the other hand, focused exclusively on terrorism. DHS has field-based operations. So increasingly, we're knitting all of that together, right? And that's a big success of the information sharing environment, too, is driving that alignment across all of these different entities that have developed over the last 50 years based on specific threats, but now they're all working together. And they all have their own lane in the road, but they're sharing information, they're collaborating, which is critical today because you think about the evolution of technology, the evolution of the threat, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about that, but that evolution is fast and going faster. And traditional stovepipe ways of government working just can't keep up.
Well, as you're describing it, as a the entities driving alignment, 50 years ago, you think about how did we get across the country? We took Route 66, or we took another road, or you took whatever road that you knew about in the back roads. Now the interstate highway has been developed.
Interstate 40 now.
There you go. And instead of we're not all on the same road, but we all know the roads we're going, right? We know the interstate highway system, and that's a great metaphor for what you guys have been working on for the last decade.
It is, and. You were talking about the use of standards. Another aspect of this, many of the fusion centers or other centers become nodes now for state or regional information sharing environments. Using the guidance, the standards, the frameworks that we promulgated at the national level in close consultation with our non-federal partners, state and local partners, using their own money, their own authorities, are building information sharing environments for the scope of their mission, right? But using those frameworks so that they can plug into the national IOC. And that's a pretty interesting development. When you think about models for delivery of services to citizens, you think about models for more effective and efficient management of government resources, the fact that you can actually support that kind of self-organization and leverage those fragmented appropriations and get that secondary use in a policy-compliant way, right? Nobody, we're all using the privacy policies, all very sensitive to information security. It's mission-appropriate sharing, right? We're removing artificial barriers for collaboration, coordination, and information sharing and safeguarding.
We have to take a break. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Shmendra Pal, who, up until January 20th, was the program manager of the information sharing environment. I caught up with Pal before he left his role as the program manager for the information sharing environment after 6 years. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Shmendra Pal, who up until January 20th was the program manager of the information sharing environment. I caught up with Pal before he left his role after 6 years as the program manager of the information sharing environment.
When you talk about the work at the ISC, a lot of what you do is at all levels of government, not just federal, but state, local. It's with the private sector and standards bodies. Let me hone in on the federal side for a second. And since our audience of federal employees and contractors, talk a little bit about from the ISC's perspective, what's your impact been over the last, four, five, 6 years on the federal level? That you talk about DHS, you talk about justice, but there's also health IT. Go through some of those examples of what you think maybe is the area where you said, this is where I can point to and say, wow, much different over the last 6 years.
We work the closest with DHS, DOJ, FBI. We have a material footprint with DOD, and then it tends to drop off a little bit. Some in the IC, and there's pockets elsewhere. I think there's two things I'd highlight. One is, with those agencies I've mentioned, and in particular DHS, you're seeing greater degrees of cohesion in their enterprise architectures going all the way down to implementation. I'd highlight some of the work that Donna Roy is doing there in the Office of the CIO under Luke McCormick's leadership. Close consultation with Undersecretary Taylor, working with the operating divisions across DHS. HISN, we've talked about that. That is, in many ways, the raison d'etre for DHS was information sharing and having a portal strategy that's got legs with federal and non-federal players like HISN is critical to bringing stuff together. To a lesser extent, similar kinds of things with DOJ and FBI. There's also, though, the promulgation of frameworks and best practices. So the work that we've done to support our partners around federated identity credential and access management, continued maturation of the NEEM, National Information Exchange Model, work that we've been piloting and funding and supporting with the Standards Coordinating Council around policy automation with the project interoperability. There's a lot of interesting opportunities there. And a lot of interested folks across the government looking at that and trying to leverage those best practices, leverage those frameworks for their own purposes.
You mentioned earlier about the difference in technology and how it's impacted the ISC over the last 4 or 5 years. Let's dig into that a little bit, because I think, if there's one thing that has changed is 6 years ago, when we had this conversation, we weren't really talking too much about cloud as one example, or cybersecurity was important, but OPM hadn't happened, JPMorgan Chase, Target, all those breaches hadn't happened yet. And then this emergence of health IT in terms of not just HIPAA, because that's been around, but this idea that can doctors and, you know, and hospitals and health practitioners share data and how that fits in? So talk a little bit about that constant churn of technology.
Yes, that's a good point. Technology is changing at a faster rate. And the rate of change is much faster than the rate of the ability of the federal government to absorb those technological changes in stovepipe programmatic ways. With the ISC, some great examples here is our flagship is suspicious activity reporting, see something, say something, Neighborhood Watch for the Nation, right? This is looking at an operational standard, a process for different members of the ISC, 18,000 police departments, 90% of which have 50 or fewer sworn officers, federal, private sector entities, to be able to share tips and leads, right, in a process for establishing those, standardizing those, vetting those, sharing those. Well, that's based on you seeing something and calling the police or, you know, so forth. Now, much activity is online, right? So how do you think about, you know, social media? So we've had a project that we've been sponsoring with our state and local partners about real-time analysis of social media. This is something that our partners do across the board, right? Looking, you know, for threats to public safety and all the rest. So we've been helping them with privacy policies, right? Standard business process, guidelines, you know, technology frameworks and all the rest to be able to, you know, add more standardization what they do and be able to have more model policy, things like that, to be more effective and to be able to leverage each other. You know, an interesting example here, though, is that, you know, the team approach we take here, lots of folks are doing this. This is happening in a distributed and centralized way. Can we raise, you know, the water level here, raise all boats so that they're doing it in a consistent, professional way that protects privacy and security? But also, can we work through how do you coordinate, right? How do you make sure that you're deconflicted, right? That you're, you know, doing something in a way that doesn't step on somebody else and so forth. So that's using some of the successes that we've had in the deconfliction side to be able to share information to make sure that folks are coordinated at the front end of what they're doing.
I would probably say the biggest change over the last 6 years is the rise of social media. The amount of information that is now shared through social media is incredible. There's the one example recently where the mannequin challenge and a bunch of people did the mannequin challenge with guns, kind of like a shootout, and the police used that view on Instagram or social media, whatever it was on, and then raided the house and found drugs and weapons and other things.
Yeah.
That's a great example to me of the change that probably you've seen in this world of social media.
There's been a lot of that. And it's tragic and unfortunate, but there are examples where individuals have tweeted their intent to harm other people, harm law enforcement, right, and carried through on those threats. And there's a short time window. You know, I'll give you another example. Chattanooga, a couple of years ago, a horrific attack, right, of DOD recruiting facilities, two facilities involved. There was a gap between the first attack and second attack. The 911 operators knew about the attack, but the word didn't get to that second recruiting center, and that's where the preponderance of the deaths were. We've been supporting our partners at DOD. This is you were asking earlier about federal footprint. They've been building policy around accelerated alerts, warnings, and notifications, right? DOD as an organization has such an incredible national footprint, bases, but also facilities outside of bases like recruiting centers. So as much as they have a need to, you know, have that situational awareness within the DOD enterprise, out at the edge of the enterprise, it's almost as important or more important for them to coordinate in their communities, right, to have that real-time or near-real-time alerting. So our partners over in DOD have done this successfully. Again, it's interesting to kind of see this. As big as DOD is, they were able to do this because there's another big entity, the National Network of Fusion Centers, and emergency management community, right, that has come together around information sharing and safeguarding in many ways under the ISC umbrella. So the fact that they could pull something off like that without a lot of money, a reasonable time frame at scale, it's pretty impressive. And could that have happened 6 years ago or 10 years ago? I'm not so sure. But now those kinds of things are doable and repeatable and are happening more and more often.
Social media is one, probably cloud computing is the other piece of this, where you can have access anywhere, anytime to your data.
Yeah.
And that leads us down the path of identity management too. Talk a little bit about the ISC's role in using the cloud to connect people and share information.
You've got great examples of clouds, for example, in the intelligence community, the iSight initiative. you know, the work that the federal CIO, that GSA have done around FedRAMP and, you know, CloudFirst. Where we've been focusing is ensuring that you can have a precise, robust, and executable expression of policy, right? That policy then allows you to think about going to the cloud and managing your information in the cloud at the policy level, right? As opposed to thinking about taking individual technologies and moving them to the cloud. So let me give you an example, right? So I've talked about the project interoperability. I've talked about our work with the information sharing and safeguarding core interoperability framework. All of those are based on engineered expressions of the controls in the NIST 853 series, right? So if you can start to specify in a precise way what the information policy is for your organization, instead of as a Word document or a PDF that's been handcrafted and then you've introduced local variations into that document based on your agency or your mission area that don't necessarily add value in terms of security and privacy, that becomes an easier way then to think about how do you audit the implementation of those controls? How do you measure that, right? How do you make sure that you're using standards to accepted, industry accepted standards frameworks for expressing your controls? If you flip that around, if you're on the industry side, right? If you're a cloud service provider that's international in scope, as big as the federal government is a niche market. As big as a DOD or a civilian federal community, it's a smaller niche market. As big as any program is, and the biggest program you can mention, it's a niche on a niche on a niche for these. The cloud is inherently international. So if you're a cloud service provider and you've got world-class security and privacy controls, but it's a shared responsibility model, you want to be able to expose the controls you've implemented to be configured in ways that your customer works for your customer. And wouldn't you like to have one set of controls that you can implement and then, you know, allow your customer to configure those in an automated way? So there's a compelling business case on both sides of the equation for this kind of policy, standardization, harmonization, and automation. And that's really where we're putting a lot of eggs into that basket, a lot of our effort, because we think that's key to the next generation of culture change and really enabling the economies of the cloud to be unlocked to the benefit of the government.
One of the things about cloud that we hear time again is there's a concern about the security of it. Is there a concern for the my data is being mixed with your data and I need my data separate? Do you hear that in the law enforcement community when it comes to information sharing? There are ways, obviously, to separate data. There are ways to have a government-only cloud or a agency X-only cloud. But are you hearing that in this community, that there's those concerns?
I do hear that, but less than I used to. And I think that's more of an education issue, because I'm with the camp that firmly believes that security in the cloud has the potential to be order of magnitude more secure than any agency. You know, if you're the biggest agency that has the human capital and the money, right, you know, maybe you can compete with these Googles, Amazons, so on and so forth, the Microsofts, I mean, the list goes on, right? But even that's a risky proposition. You're better off improving the quality of your information management, separating out the information technology from the information itself and the information management, and then looking to host your information in the cloud, in applications, on platforms, in infrastructure. Everybody in this business looks at shared responsibility models at the end of the day. So that's where the cracks could appear, right? And so where there's cracks, there's opportunities for finger pointing, for stuff to fall through those cracks. That's where it goes back to the folks that have more maturity in how they do information management and information policy are the ones that are better positioned to leverage the cloud and to mitigate those risks that occur in the shared responsibility model.
The cloud is one piece of it, but if you can control the roles and responsibilities, the identity management piece, if you will, that also then add that layer on top, and then the cloud security becomes less scary, because if you are adding that assertions into the cloud and say, well, Shmendra Pal can only see this type of data, can only share this type of data, and can only change this type of data, then wherever it's located, it doesn't really matter, because you have that security built into the data layer.
Exactly right. I mean, there are issues around sovereignty that, you know, that do impact location, but I see that as a second-tier issue, frankly. And here in the U.S., I think there's plenty of opportunities to manage that issue and to do exactly what you said, Jason.
We have to take a break. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Shmendra Pal, who, up until January 20th, was the program manager of the information sharing environment. I caught up with Pal before he left his role as the program manager for the information sharing environment after 6 years. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Shemendra Paul, who up until January 20th was the program manager of the Information Sharing Environment. I caught up with Paul before he left his role after 6 years as the program manager of the Information Sharing Environment.
The ISC recently sent its annual report to Congress. It's been a couple months now, but let's take a look at that. If you can share some highlights for us, if you can share some of the accomplishments over the last year. I think one of the great things about the report you guys send to Congress is, one, you make it easily readable. It's not 1,000 pages. And two, it really shows the impact, I think, that the information sharing environment is having across federal, state, and local, and obviously private sector.
Yes, that's the biggest evolution of the report under my stewardship. It became pretty big, a four-page book, and then it is down now to seven pages. So it's much more streamlined. And we did that because most of the content that got cut is up on the web. It's not really cut. It's just on our website and accessible that way. And so we're delivering.
And it's also understandable that if you send 1,000 pages to Congress, they're only going to read one page. So then
six pages, so you got a chance.
Exactly. And it's not just you guys. I think that's anyone in government. So let's be clear. This is not an ISE issue.
No, not at all. Not at all. So when we look in the year in review, there's three lines of activity, and we've advanced in all three. One is advancing the terrorism-related ISE at the domestic nexus of public safety and national security. We've had a lot of our work is in that area, federal, state, local, the law enforcement, homeland security, intelligence nexus. Second is our efforts to better package and integrate the various information interoperability frameworks, standards, guidelines that are developed out of a decade of activity with all of our partners, and make the investments to integrate, package that, and really tackle that last mile of policy automation in a federated environment. And so we've made substantial progress on that and actually have pilots underway. And I'm hoping that in next year's annual report, we're going to be able to actually report out results and our thoughts on how our activity can scale up as a mission-agnostic layer that's usable beyond our terrorism-related mission. And then finally, in the performance evaluation area, we supported our agency partners to do a fairly good job of reasonably completing implementation of the implementation of the priority objectives of the National Strategy for Information Sharing and Safeguarding that President Obama issued in 2012 and against the implementation plan that we in the White House issued in 2013. So it's good progress on all fronts, exciting work ahead. Of course, to be influenced by the next team of leaders that come in and, the policy frameworks that the Trump-Pence administration want to put in place in this domestic counterterrorism space and this information sharing and safeguarding space.
And we'll make sure we link to that report to Congress on federalnewsradio.com, make sure people can find it easily. And obviously, they can find it on
ISC.gov, www.ISC.gov, and also www.standardscoordination.org, the website of the Standards Coordinating Council.
See, I set you up for that. I knew you knew that website by heart. Let me back up and ask a couple follow-ups. Number one, executive order from the president on information sharing. Talk a little bit about maybe something that stands out to you from that effort over the last year that you guys have helped or worked on. Because I think one of the goals this came from was obviously the post-Edward Snowden, the post-concerns over some of the data. Yeah. That wasn't maybe not shared, the dots not connected, to go back to that phrase. What changes have you seen over the last year or so?
Well, we've had a couple of roles around cybersecurity, information sharing, and safeguarding, helping our federal partners from a performance evaluation perspective around better securing classified information on classified networks. For a while, helping agencies share cybersecurity threat information between federal agencies to federal centers. And the main line of effort where I think we have the best and most unique contribution and where we're putting our energy going forward is around helping our state and local partners build a capacity around cybersecurity. Some of this is with FBI, with DOJ, with DHS, Secret Service, so on and so forth. So this is them looking at the cybercrime mission. We've done work around deconfliction, which is sort of coordinating case information as a pointer system, not actually sharing the information, but saying, Jason, you better call Shemendra because you're looking at the same target or a common IP address or a common email. So So we're extending the deconfliction work, which is happening at scale today, to include cyber-related data elements. And that's pretty exciting work for our partners. We sponsored an activity around building up baseline capabilities for fusion centers to build out cyber capability, and that was well-received. The MSISAC was a part of that process. So, you know, again, unity of effort around the cybersecurity mission. And then we've been helping our partners around sharing some threat intelligence work and looking at incident response around hacktivists. And there's been a lot of work. A last thing I'll mention is that it's been a threat of ours around private sector information sharing. Private sector is a stakeholder set for us. Infrastructure, owner-operators, key critical infrastructure. And there, in addition to working with DHS and FBI, that are the prime agencies in this regard, we've put a lot of energy into supporting our non-federal partners, the fusion centers, the state and locals, right, to you know, be able to themselves build capacity to better integrate private sector partners in consultation with FBI and DHS, of course. You think about it, the federal level, we can deal with the top 1,000, top 10,000, you know, even the top 100,000. That leaves several million other entities out there that, and so the force multiplier has got to be unity of effort, scaling at the state and local level. And that's an accepted idea, and trying to make that real is something that we put a lot of energy into.
Fascinating report. Again, we'll make sure we link to that and people can kind of read through it and see what else you guys have worked on. A couple other things of interest. Let's talk a little bit about the ISC and where do you see it going? You know, 6 years ago when we had this conversation, we probably couldn't predict where we are today. But I'm going to ask you to do that anyways and tell me in the next 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years even, if we have this conversation again, where are we going to be with information sharing?
Where do we think it's going to go? Number one, you know, as a fellow who's got a background in enterprise architecture, I've resisted the idea of an enterprise architecture in the space. We've talked about a framework and our partners doing their own architectures. But my sense is that we've had enough progress, enough momentum that we can start to sketch out what is the 2B look like, you know, using more traditional frameworks, enterprise architecture frameworks, to have a more coherent vision about where we're headed. And we key to making that happen is the emergence of some authoritative coordination and collaboration structures, principally the Criminal Intelligence Coordinating Council, which is underneath a DOJ advisory committee, but is used at the department head and deputy level, the federal side, and has got the chief executives of the national practice associations in this space, law enforcement associations. So I think we're going to have a much more coherent architecture. Right, so 6 years ago, I would have said it was intractable. Now it's just really, really hard. And in 6 years, I won't say it's done, but I'll say we have a roadmap that's understandable by lay people.
That's a bold prediction because, you know, EA, as soon as you bring it up, the eyes glaze over and people start tuning you out. So,
but it's not about EA. It's about unity of effort in our national unit space, in our constitutional democracy, taking advantage of, you know, frankly, one of the things that's an asymmetric advantage our country has over our adversaries, which is our constitutional democracy, right, is the open society, is the free market. And I think, you know, we're going to be able to kind of, we're at a place now where it's not central planning, it's more about a coordination tool.
Interesting. All right, give me one last bold prediction.
Our work with Project Interoperability and the Core Interoperability Framework will mature and catch fire, and we think it's got a lot of potential as a thin layer on the internet. Policy harmonization, standardization, and increasingly automation and procurement of information management services encapsulated from technology. And we think that in the next several years, that should start to pan out in scale.
We have to take a break. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Shmendra Pal, who, up until January 20th, was the program manager of the information sharing environment. I caught up with Paul before he left his role as the program manager for the information sharing environment after 6 years. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Shmendra Pal, who up until January 20th was the program manager of the information sharing environment. I caught up with Paul before he left his role after 6 years as the program manager of the information sharing environment.
It's one thing to put out these high-level roadmaps. It's wonderful that, you know, people are looking at them, but are they being implemented? And you brought up the fact that's really the important piece here. Are they writing code? Are they implementing it in their solutions and software? Are you seeing that happening? Do you have, obviously, vendors play a role. They have a big input. But they're part of the discussions, I imagine. But are they coming back to you saying, hey, we've taken that and we've put that in all our products? Or, hey, this is so great that we're that the interoperability piece is so important to us, that we understand where you're coming from. We've made that, you know, part of our product development effort. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's the heart of the work we're doing with the Standards Coordinating Council. So we stood up the Standards Coordinating Council with our consultation with our federal partners. That's a unique public-private partnership. Three international standards organizations, the OASIS, Object Management Group, and the Open Geospatial Consortium. Several industry associations, including the IGES Institute, ACT IAC, and others. Federal participation, state and local participation via the national practice associations that are focused in this area. So the flagship within the SCC is the governance is project interoperability. And within that, the information sharing and safeguarding core interoperability framework. So what we're trying to do is to go from those higher level enterprise architecture documents, which are important to drive alignment strategy around technology, and set the framework, but then you're drilling that down into a much more constrained set of standards that are implemented in software products or custom developed software or open source software. And then, you know, you doing that through a set of assertions that are testable, right? And those assertions are around bundles of controls, security and privacy controls, that are, again, modeled on the NIST 853 series, the work that Ron Ross and company have done, that are established really as the gold standard. Thousands of controls. Everybody uses them, right? But they implement them in slightly distinct ways using language that's specific to their community. And, you know, at the end of the day, those variations, they pile up and become what I think of as gratuitous variations because they don't add value to the mission. They don't add value in terms of security and privacy, but they are barriers to information interoperability.
And I think a couple of things there that were key, not just the interoperability piece, which you've mentioned several times, but you can test against it. You can ensure that they're meeting your needs. And then it also helps ensure that Shmendra Paul doesn't have access to something he shouldn't do. Or if he does, we know that maybe there's audit logs or there's a log that shows he looked at this document on this date at this time and did this with and maybe downloaded it or printed it out or whatever it is. That's all built into this automated environment in many ways.
By having the Standards Coordinating Council drive this in terms of the oversight and the umbrella under which we do this, we got a few things. One is we are aligned with the mainstream of international information communication technology standards. So you're not doing a cul-de-sac. It's not a one-off, right? It's standards-based. Two is industry is at the table and influencing the frameworks. Obviously, government controls our requirements. This is a step away from the procurements. But at the very front end, having a consistent framework and having a way to share best practices also, you know, maintains buy-in. And then finally, it is useful for standards-based procurement, standards-based acquisition, whether it's through special condition language on grants with our state and local partners, whether it's direct. And we've piloted that too, right, where we've shown things like 25-to-1 cost savings, or if doing this approach means that for typical changes that occur in the business process, they can be easily handled by vendors as a part of their tech refresh upgrades versus a one-off kind of thing. So both of those are major drivers of cost savings. Look, in the public sector, there's a fair amount of money. So many people think there's a lot of money. The issue is fragmentation, whether it's fragmentation and stovepiping at the federal level or at the state and local level. MySpace, 18,000 police departments, most of them are small. So the key is, how do you align those fragmented appropriations across levels of government, across domains of activity? Standards that are cross-cutting is the way to do it.
Another interesting pilot that's ongoing is something called the Trust Framework. Talk about what that is and then ISC's role as well.
Sure. The Trust Framework, trust marks, if you like, is something that came out of several years of piloting out of NIST, National Institute for Standards and Technology, the NSTIC Program Office, National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. So the key challenge that we're looking at there is that you build out an identity ecosystem. You know, there's no single way to do it. It's going to be heterogeneous and federated. It's going to interfederate. So the idea is, how do you compare and contrast and drive interoperability across all these various federations, whether it's a health federation, a financial federation, a law enforcement federation, a Homeland Security Federation, an intelligence federation like with EyeSight. And so the key is having it's a NEEM-like idea, having a reference model. Instead of, like, at NEEM, it's data elements. With the trust mark, it's policy controls. This is that NIST 853 series, right? NIST has done an excellent job of defining the set of the canonical set of controls for privacy, for security, for other types of non-functional considerations. Everybody uses them. Across every aspect of the federal government, everybody anchors up to those. State and local governments, internationally, even in the private sector, folks use these frameworks. So what we've been able to do is to leverage the investment that NIST made, leverage other activities like piloting with federal agencies like DHS and the data framework, some of the work that's been done with our state and local partners, work that we've done with information interoperability broadly under the ISE umbrella for the last decade. And we've been integrating that into something called Project Interoperability and updating the core interoperability framework to fully reflect integration of these trustmark-like ideas, so assertions around policy. Doing this job for 6.5 years, you know, integrating my experiences when I was at OMB, at DOJ, my predecessors, listening to input across the community, culture change and dealing with scaling up interoperability at the policy level, that's the frontier. That's what is cracking that is going to help us scale this up, and that's what we're trying to do with this trust approach. We're really bullish on it. We have several pilots underway that in turn inform on production activity and previous pilots for the individual components, right? So there's many threads here that we're integrating, right? And this really does represent a culmination of a decade of terrorism-related information sharing.
Shmendra, we've talked a lot about identity management, both specific efforts, more broadly, about frameworks. Where do you see this going, you know, over the next, you know, 3-5 years? Do you see us finally getting to the point where something like the backend attribute exchange or something like a trust framework is going to be used more broadly, yeah, and we're just not going to talk about pilots a lot?
You know, the big picture here is that the for lack of a better term, the holy grail of for CIOs, for information sharing professionals, has been policy-based IT. Right. People have talked about that. The role of a CIO needs to be much more focused on information policy, information management, and that becoming more policy-based, more formalized, more executable. So I think we're on the cusp of making that transition to where CIOs will work with their policy leads in their agencies and departments, with their mission programs, to be able to really isolate their requirements at the policy level, the business process, and the technical level through a series of assertions, right, that can be increasingly formalized, described in XML, right, support procurement of cloud-based services, to be able to, you know, provide higher degrees of cybersecurity and policy assurance, to be able to provide more mission agility. Whether that takes 3 to 5 years or more, that's where we're headed. Some of the work we're doing with Project Interoperability is in the ICIF, the Information Sharing Safeguarding Core Interoperability Framework. We're targeting that to be a thin layer on the internet. Clearly useful in our core space, but horizontal, like the PICAM work we talked about earlier. So that's where I think we're going.
Very nice. Shmendra Pal is the Program Manager for the Information Sharing Environment. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Jason, pleasure's all mine.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.